CF United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
I like to start out with talking about what I'm going to cover in this presentation, so that way if it's something that you don't want to sit through, you can make that decision quickly. You're here because you want to understand why efficient SQL is important and learn techniques that you can use across many relational database management systems. You want to learn what not to do. These are the common pitfalls to avoid that we all start out with early on, the fast and easy things, the bad techniques that we have a hard time getting past. And you want to see some examples and some results of metrics, comparing different techniques and seeing how much faster one is than the other. I've been doing extensive SQL and database design since 1995, and last month, June, marked my 10th anniversary of Cold Fusion development. I started back in version 1.5. I've been a member of team insert company name here since 1997. It was Allaire, then Macromedia, now it's Adobe. So I've seen Cold Fusion go from the very early stages where you had to call the executable in every URL because they didn't have any APIs to the web server or connectors to IIS, all the way through to the purchase of Macromedia by Adobe. I've co-authored a couple Cold Fusion MX books that I think maybe one or two people bought copies of, and I run a website called webtricks.com where all the source code for this presentation and the presentation itself is already up there, as well as the presentation and source code for my structures presentation. The website, webtricks.com, is a little bit out of date, but I have promised Ray Camden that I will have a blog up by the end of the summer. So that's something. Yes?
The code base installs amazingly quickly, by the way. Is blog CSV?
Yes, yeah. He said he'd sell it to me for $20. It's not the installation that takes a long time. It's just me getting off my butt and doing it and thinking of something to say.
Give us your FTP address.
We'll
do it for you.
Oh, okay, sure. No. Nice try, though. I'm not that tired yet this morning. And I am currently employed as an internal systems architect at a company called Input in Northern Virginia, so I'm local to this area, and I'm just about ready to celebrate my third anniversary there, which is sort of a lifetime in internet years. All right, today I'm going to talk about why you want to improve SQL efficiency. You know, a lot of people think my queries work. That's all I need. If they pull the data that I want, I don't care if it takes 10 minutes. It's, you know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. As I said, I'm going to talk about the things to avoid. I'm going to talk about the differences between joins and subqueries and why you would use one over the other and why one might be more efficient than the other. Talk about some design considerations because it's not all about the SQL code. Sometimes it's about the underlying structure of your database. I'm going to show a lot of examples, and I should also have some time for any specific examples that people want to see. And if there's a query or technique that you want to see, then I'll be able to show you that. So who cares about efficiency? Like I said, your query runs. Isn't that all that matters? Well, your system administrators care because they don't want to keep putting more and more memory into servers or getting more and more servers. That gets expensive. I've also discovered they don't like being paged in the middle of the night. If the site goes down at 3 a.m., I don't have a BlackBerry, but they do. And they can be a little nasty the next morning. So I've learned to, try to avoid the server, making the server crash. Your site visitors care if efficiency is low. Because if a page takes a long time to view, they're not going to come back to your website. And that can mean lost revenue for your company, which means your boss is going to care. If you have two developers sitting next to each other and they both write code that works, but one of those developers writes code that's more efficient, it runs quicker, well, if there's time for a promotion or lay somebody off, the person who writes the more efficient, cleaner code is going to be the person to benefit from that. So these are all really good reasons why you want to make things more efficient. So here's two different scenarios. In the first case, say your database access, which is your CF query, CF stored proc, all those tags, take about 50% of the time it takes to process the page and load it. That's the time from when your server gets the initial request to when the browser finishes loading the HTML. And 50% is not unreasonable. I mean, we use a lot of database access. As Ben Forda said in the first morning's keynote, a lot of what we do with Cold Fusion is search results, drilling down, detail pages. It's very database intensive. So that leaves us 50% for everything else. I'm going to say 10% for just general site overhead. These are your security routines, you know, loading things in the scope and the memory. 20% maybe for code logic. This is your conditional logic, you know, any sort of other Cold Fusion programming you're doing. And 20% left for page load. This is how long it's going to take the browser to load the page. The more HTML or JavaScript you have, the longer it's going to take to render. Well, if you can cut your database access down to 30%, then it gives you more leeway to increase your other processes, or you can just have your page load quicker, which is also a good thing. Database efficiency is good for many reasons. As I said, it's going to decrease your total page processing time. More importantly, it reduces load on the database. So if you have a bunch of things queued up, inserts, updates, their locking tables, the less time your queries take, the quicker all of your processes can get through. And this is a huge thing. And as I said, it's going to allow more time for other processes. So you can have more complex Cold Fusion code if you get your database queries as efficient as possible. The sample database I'm going to use for this presentation is one that is given out by the USDA. It's their National Nutrient Database. It has about 12 tables, and the main table has 6,661 rows in it. So it's a very large database, you know, large, relatively speaking, for samples. So I thought it was a good one to show metrics on. It's available for free. Here's the URL, which you can also, when you download the presentation. They also have a searchable interface, and it's nice if you want to find out all the, you know, fat and calories and alcohol content of the foods you eat. If you don't have to search it. You can download it in both Access and in flat text files. So it's nice because it's already there, it's already populated. You don't have to do anything else. All right, techniques to avoid. Does anybody know what the number one technique to avoid is when writing efficient queries? Select star, absolutely. Select star is bad because you're not telling the database what columns you want. It has to figure it out. So it has to go to its internal table structure and say, what columns are available for the table or tables that this person wants them from? So that's queries that are running on your back end. In SQL Server, it's in the syscolumns table. I'm not sure the internal structure for other databases. But it takes a lot more time than typing out your column names. Even if you want every single column from that table, it is better from the database's perspective to type them out. It's not better from yours because you have to type a lot more, but you only have to type that once, whereas the database is going to have to query them every time it runs the query. It also does not allow for column aliasing. So you have two tables, they both have the same column name, but different values, and you want them both. If you just select star and join, you're not going to get the two columns. So column aliasing is a very nice feature, and you can't use it with select star. So here's some metrics that I ran with Cold Fusion on my laptop. I have the food description table, which is all the foods, all my 6,000 plus rows. I selected star from that, and the average time was 387.5 milliseconds. Then I typed out all of my column names. And you can see there's a lot of them, so yes, it took more time than select star to type them out. And that got my time down to 295.4 milliseconds. Well, lo and behold, when I just typed two column names, because that's all I really wanted, I got 35.1. Now, chances are you're not going to want every single column from your table. You only want certain columns. Only request what you want. If you ask for more than you want, it's going to take longer. So, you know, most likely you're going to be somewhere between two and all. You know, you maybe want five or six, but it's still going to be a lot less overhead to just get the specific columns you want. You want to avoid using where in. And the reason is this returns an entire subquery for every row, and it's very inefficient. So if you say select, you know, column name from table where my ID is in, select ID from the second table, it's going to run this subquery, select ID from table 2, for every single query. So it's or every single row. Yes?
Does that also apply if your inner select is not a select but a common delimited list of primary IDs?
Right. I'm going to get to that in 1 second. It's a very good question. So this query, select ID from table 2, is going to get run for each row. So in the case of my one table, I have over 6,000 rows. This little query is going to get run over 6,000 times. Now his question was, what if you're passing in a row of IDs? So on a form, you have a multi-select or checkbox, and people select the IDs. You pass it to your action. You absolutely want to use in that case. So you have like a comma delimited list of IDs or values. You still need to use in. That there's pretty much no way to avoid it, and it is a lot more efficient because you have a set string. You're not running a query over and over again. So there are certainly times when you use where in, but if you're joining or calling from another table, chances are you can use where exists instead. When you do exists, you still have your subquery, but you're joining your subquery table on your main table. So in this case, the syntax is where exists, and I'm not using an ID or a column name because before it was where ID in, and this is just where exists. And I'm going to select one from table 2. And so I'm selecting one. Some people do select star, which is bad, as we just discussed. I could say select ID, select name. It could be whatever. It doesn't matter. I can have one column. I can have 20 columns. I just use one, the literal numeric value 1, because it has no overhead. And so I select one from table 2. Where table2.id equals table.id. So what this means is this subquery is going to return a much smaller subset than the where in query does. Did you have a question?
Yeah, sorry, I stepped out for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
The
No, it's just pulling the value 1.
Oh, the value 1.
Yeah. No, the only time that one would pull the first column is if you're doing an order by.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so in... Right.
So you're using that to mimic a join.
Mm-hmm.
And is that better than a join?
That is actually a good question, and I will... It can be, and I will show an example of that when I go into the examples. That was something somebody asked Wednesday. A lot of times you might just want to join, but there are times when you don't want to join, and... Yes, and I will show you a good example of that. Another reason where exists is nice is, as I said, that the columns are irrelevant in your subquery. So you could call 3 columns, group by, you could have this weird complex query, and it's still going to work. Whereas if you use where in, you can only pull back one column, and it has to match the column in your first table. So it gives you a lot more leeway to manipulate the data in your subquery. So here's some metrics. The first one I did is I want to return all of my food items where the food group has a name that's either in the sweets or snacks food group. And this is kind of a convoluted query, and fortunately I couldn't think of a better example that would fit in the slide. So if I use in... It takes 31.54 milliseconds. The same query, same results, but using exists, takes 20.93. So it only takes 2/3 the amount of time that in takes. So it is going to be faster. And I will show some better examples of this a little bit later on. And if you want to use, you know, in addition to in, you also have not in, you also have not exists. So you just put the keyword not before either your in or your exists. To get the negative. Joins and subqueries are absolutely necessary in relational databases. I mean, that's the whole point of relational databases, is not to have one flat file, to have these tables that you need to join on. But they can also increase your processing time, so you need to use them with care. Just as selecting column names that you don't need, you don't want to select tables that you don't need. The golden rule with SQL is don't get more than you need. Just get what you want, and it's going to make things a lot faster. But you can optimize joins and subqueries. So there are several join types. You have inner join, where it's quality, you know, return from table A, where the value equals table B. Outer join, saying I want everything in this table and the related data in this table, but I still want everything in this one. And then there's cross joins, which are usually done by mistake. When you forget to do a join, you get a Cartesian product, which can be kind of fun, nice, memory intensive, and typically you're not going to want to do it. No. I have seen it, and I have done it once, and I needed every combination. I needed to populate ones and zeros in security permission, and I actually did a cross join, and I had a case statement in my select that would populate either a 0 or 1 because it would give every single permission. The cross join returned every permission for every combination of person.
You were trying to create a grid on an output of people versus something available.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, there are actually legitimate times to do a cross join, but it is going to be rare, and more often than not, people do it as a mistake. Right. There's two ways to create joins. The first one is in the where clause. And the from clause for all of these join types is the same, from table 1, comma, table 2. If you're doing an inner join, you just say where column 1, you know, the first table column equals the second table column. If you're doing left outer join, you want an asterisk to the left of the equality sign. And if you're doing a right outer join, you're doing the asterisk on the right.
Is this database
agnostic? This is standard SQL. So the answer is no.
Most of them will do that. If not, you just have to do your join and make sure you say left and right.
Exactly. And
they use the plus sign on the table itself.
Yes, I have that a little further because the databases just all do everything a little bit differently. So much for standards. I prefer doing it in the from clause. And one of the reasons for me is I don't have to worry about the asterisks, which I sometimes forget which direction they go in. And also, this reads like English to me. I mean, one of the nice things about SQL is that it does read like English. Select this table from these, I mean, select this column from these tables where, and when you do an inner join, it says, okay, inner join this table or outer join. And to me, it seems more elegant, if that's a good word. The outer keyword for left outer join and right outer join a lot of times is optional. I just use it because I've always used it. This is, I think, a nicer way to do your joins. It is also the way that the standard SQL encourages you to join. And as we said, every single database is different in the way joins are handled. Microsoft SQL Server, I discovered something interesting as I was finishing up my presentation. When I started it, I had an older laptop, and a couple weeks ago, about a month and a half ago, I got a nice new laptop, dual-core processor, fingerprint reader, you know, bells and whistles. Thankfully, I didn't have to pay for it. And, you know, we're now using SQL Server 2005 at work, so I have my SQL Server 2005 Express Edition, and I was trying to do a left outer join using asterisk equals, and I got a little error. It said, oh, SQL Server 2005 doesn't support this unless you run this system stored procedure and set some value from the default of 80 to 90. And it also said that future versions might not support it at all. So if you are using SQL Server, even if you're not using 2005 yet, you want to avoid joins in your where clause because there might be a day when it's not supported and you'll have to go through and upgrade everything, and wouldn't that be a pain? Oracle. Thankfully, 9i and later support joins in the from clause. I used Oracle years ago before 9i was out, and I had to use this lovely syntax with the plus symbol. And I don't know why, but I had to look it up in the reference every time I did it. It just was something that just I couldn't get because it was so different from what I was used to. So, you know, thankfully, hopefully if you're using Oracle, you're using 9i or later. Microsoft Access. The first thing I would say is don't program in Access. That's, you know, friends don't let friends use Access. And there's many reasons for that. And with joins, multiple joins require special nesting. You have to put parentheses in for every single join. Now, I only use parentheses when I'm doing an inner join with a left outer join that has to inner join to another table, you know, so that SQL knows the order of operations. With Access, you have to have parentheses every single one. It considers it a subtable, subtable, a subtable. So I... Yeah, so I found it just very annoying. But the bottom line is just check your database documentation for specific examples. They all do joins. It just might be a little bit different. Join versus subquery, deathmatch. They can be used to return the same results. When you do this, if they do return the same results, typically the join option you would use is an outer join, and you want to return an aggregate value of the outer joined table, and you're going to have a group by and or a having clause. If you do a subquery, the outer join is done in the subquery, and it just returns a single value. And I will show an example of that. It was hard to fit in the slide itself, so I have some examples of when you would use one versus the other. There are some design considerations, as I said. The first one are keys, primary keys, foreign keys, and indexes. These can significantly increase or decrease the amount of time it takes to do select queries, but they increase the time it takes to insert and update. So if you have, say, a table that stores transaction information, it gets inserted on every hit, and it doesn't get queried maybe nightly, it gets moved to something else for reporting, you don't really want to put indexes on that table because you just want it to go in quickly. But if you have a table, say, your contact information, that only gets updated when someone opens a form, hits submit, it doesn't matter if it takes a couple extra milliseconds to make the update because of the keys, but because you're reporting on that all the time and you want your select queries to be as efficient as possible. So you just kind of want to think about your table. You don't want to put too many indexes on it. You want to have indexed your primary keys, which when you create primary keys are indexed by default, and anything else you might join on. If you have a logins table and you're constantly selecting the email address or the login, you want to create an index on that column so that your queries are going to be a lot faster. One thing I learned this year is that foreign keys are not indexed by default. Last summer, I did a huge migration project. I created all of these new tables for contacts, organizations, created primary keys, foreign keys. I indexed email addresses, all that. And then we were having some speed issues after it was deployed. And we're going through and, you know, we took on a project to make sure almost all of our tables had the proper indexes. And I realized, or I was told, that when you create a foreign key in a table, it doesn't create an index. So I was joining on these, and the primary key table was fine, but the foreign key wasn't indexed. I went through and created dozens of indexes on my foreign keys, and the performance boost was amazing. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that was a lesson that I learned. I just assumed, and you know what assume stands for, that if you have a foreign key, it's an index. But it's not.
Did you say you want to put an index on any column you reference in your where statements?
Often. The important ones. You know, like email address is a common one. The state that somebody lives in, maybe you're searching for all users in that state. You probably don't need to index that because you're not doing it all the time. But for your really common where clause, you want to put an index on it. That I don't know, actually, if that's a common thing across all databases. It is with SQL Server. If you have a foreign key in SQL Server, it doesn't equal an index. I would check your database, you know, create your tables, add your foreign keys, and see if it's actually indexed or not. Somebody asked Wednesday, they were talking about views, whether views are faster than joining all these tables because it's pre-compiled SQL. Well, I created a view. It has thousands and thousands of rows. And if I select star from the view, everything comes back really quickly. Or not star, but my column names. But when I join on it, it took this one query up to 11 seconds to run. And the reason is, even though the columns are indexed in my initial tables, the view is not indexed. So when I'm joining on the view, it has to scan everything. There's no index, and it takes a lot longer. Now, I believe SQL Server 2005 has something called serialized views, and I know at work that we were waiting for that because somebody was talking about, okay, we can create indexes on views. That's all the information I have on it. I believe that it is possible to do. Oracle probably already does it because I do believe Oracle is a better database. It's SQL Server's easier to use, but I do think Oracle's better. So if you don't have the ability to create indexes on views, sometimes it is going to be a lot faster just to join all of your tables than creating a view. All right, now let's get into some examples. First one I'm going to show you is select columns. Now, what I'm doing, my examples are just using standard SQL, but what I'm doing is I'm creating some counters and some timers, and I'm looping from 1 to 3 and determining the average amount of time it takes to run each query. So this is some transact SQL that just allows me to loop over. I can loop over 3 times, loop over 20 times. I'm not going to walk through all this code right now, but it is included in the downloads if you're curious to see how it runs. So the first query I'm going to do is just select everything from my food description table and interjoin on the food group. So I'll get my food item in the food group. The second query is I'm doing the individual column names, all the column names. So the first one was select star, and the second one is all the column names. And finally, the third one is just getting the columns I really want, the primary key and name of both of my tables. So I'm going to loop through this 3 times, and then I'm going to print out the amount of time or the average milliseconds to run each query, as well as the efficiency boost I got with the method that should be faster. So I'm getting 9 result sets back in my grid because I did 3 queries, 3 times each. And if I look down here, select star took an average of 378 milliseconds. Select all columns was 308. So I got an 18.5 efficiency boost from that. If I selected just my needed columns, it was 162 milliseconds, which was 57% efficiency over select star and 47% efficiency over selecting each and every column name. And I'm just going to go ahead and run that again and should have similar results. Yep. So you can just see how the different methods are going to take more or less time. Next one I'm going to do is where exists, where in and where exists. So the first one is going to return all food groups that contain products that contain alcohol, because alcohol is one of the nutritional information that's stored in this database. So you can see how much alcohol is in different products. So maybe you want to broaden your horizons. You're tired of just drinking, but you still want to get that buzz. So you want to figure out what food groups you can look to. So my subquery, which I can run on its own, is going to return all of the foods, the IDs of all of the foods, or the IDs of all the food groups that contain alcohol. And when you use in, whatever your subquery is can be run as its own query. The second query is going to do where exists, and I'm going to join the food group code with the food group of the food. And if I try to run this, I get an error because it's a join. It is part of a join. So run the two of these together. How much better? The first time I ran this, if you looked up, it was -3% efficiency boost, which means where exists actually took longer than where in. This time it was 11.8% efficiency boost. And this just goes to show you, it's going to be different every single time. But if you run this over and over again, the average net effect is that using where exists is going to be a faster performance boost for you.
Any suggestions to make it easier to write that code if it's harder to run subselect exists to test it?
That's a good question. I've done that as well, trying to figure out a better way to write that. And sometimes I'll just put in hard code a value just to make sure that it works. You know, his question was, is there a way that you can get your subquery to run on its own so you can test it out and, you know, just put in a single value, an ID or something you know that's going to exist to get that to run.
Do you use any form of query building software or GUI to speed it up?
No, I just type everything on my own. I'm very anal about the way my code looks, and I don't like the way that the GUI or all those systems, you know, change it for me. Good question?
I'm asking for a helpful hint here.
Mm-hmm.
I know about inner join and outer join, but syntactically I've always used either the asterisk or the plus sign depending on what database I'm working on. What's the easiest way for me to transition and remember which text I'm supposed to use, because I can never get the inner and outer straight, and then I always have to do my query 3 times before I get it straightened out.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the best way to remember is if you use the asterisk, that's the side of the join. So if the asterisk's on the left, it's a left outer join. If the asterisk's on the right, it's a right outer join. And the plus in Oracle is the opposite. Yeah. So I... Inner join's just equal. It's the same. Yeah. Inner join is the same. Good question?
Very put all
the question is there a performance boost if you put your inner joins at the top and your outer joins at the bottom? There isn't, but I always put my inner joins at the top and the outer joins at the bottom, because you're building like a huge record set where everything's equal, and then I like to do the left outer joins because those are the optional ones. So for me, it's just a readability. I put my inner joins at the top, then the outer, and then sometimes you have nested ones. So maybe you have, for instance, I have phone numbers stored in one table, and then I have phone number type, and they join on those. So you can find out if it's the home phone number, if it's the work phone number, and I want an inner join on those because I want to make sure that my phone number is a phone number type. But I want a left outer join because the person may not have a phone number. So what I do is I do a left outer join and then parentheses an inner join. So, you know, that would be, I'd have that more towards the bottom. So that's the fun stuff, is when you get inner joins and outer joins nested. And that's something for another class. I actually did that last year. So joins can be very interesting. Let's see. Next example. Did you have a question?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's when the table has to just go through everything and find out what the information is, as opposed to just having it indexed. The database is just a lot quicker if it's indexed. She wanted to know what table scans were. He had mentioned table scans as if you don't have indexes. All right, I believe the next one is join types. Yes. So we have join types in the where clause, and this one I'm just grabbing the food items and the food group that they're in. So I'm just putting the two tables in the where clause and just grouping them equality, equal symbol. And the next one is the same query. I'm just doing inner join on column ID equals column ID. And if I run this, I get 9.54% efficiency from doing the left outer join in the from clause as opposed to the where. And if I run this again, I get 21.6% efficiency. So that worked for me both times. So in addition to being preferable to join in the from clause, it is more efficient to do it that way. All right, there are two times when you would use subqueries as opposed to joins. First is in the select clause, and the second is in the where clause. So the first one, I want to count the number of foods that have each type of nutritional information. So I want to get my nutritional information and find out how many food items have that, because not all food is going to have vitamin B or alcohol or fat. I think pretty much everything's going to have calories. So I want to get all my nutritional information and the count of the food items. So the first one, I have count. I have my aggregate function, and I'm assigning an alias to it. I'm doing a left outer join because maybe I have a nutrient that isn't in any food. And I need to do a group by, obviously, because I have an aggregate function. Well, an optional way of doing that is with a subquery. I just select my nutritional information from this table. I'm not joining it here, but I'm doing a subquery. I'm going to get a count of the food item from a subquery. So I'm joining my first table on my subquery because I just want to return one value from here. And if all you want from a second table is one value, then you're probably just going to want to do a subquery because it is going to be a little faster for you, hopefully. Yes, it is 12.2% faster to do the subquery than joining on another table that you don't need. Because when you're joining, when you do the subquery, you're just pulling back that one data value that you want, as opposed to doing a full join and then having the query determine what you want. So let's just run
that
true again.
If you're doing that for, say, three or four different tables where you just need one value,
mm-hmm.
you still just do three
yep.
or four subqueries?
Yep, yes, as opposed to joining. Question?
Yes, that if it's only returning back one row, I actually first saw this as a piece of code that other programmers passed here, but it returned back multiple rows. What's your feeling on that? Is that positive?
The question is, what if it returns multiple rows? And actually, you get an error. If your subquery returns multiple rows, you get an error because it can only return one because it's a one-to-one ratio. So if you're getting multiple rows and you're not expecting it, you might have a data issue or you're not joining on all the columns you need to join with your subquery.
It's also horrible.
Okay, that might be. In SQL Server, you do get an error if your subquery returns more than one row. Okay. Yeah. You had a question also?
I was more of a point. I don't know if there's been 2005, but I think there's a limitation of how many of you do, like 16 of
them. His statement was that there might be a limitation of how many you can do. He thinks it might be 16, and that is very possible. I don't know that for a fact.
I recently noticed that you're limited in inner selects if you do like a comma separated list of 1,000 in Oracle.
Yes. I haven't hit limits yet. Luckily, I haven't, so I'm not sure what the limits are going to be in the different databases. I do know that if in Oracle, if you hit a limit, they will rewrite it for you, depending on the size of customer you are. Is that is one of their customer service stances, that if you hit a maximum or you find a bug, they will fix it. So it's kind of a nice feature from them. And let's see. Now I'm going to show you an example of using a subquery in the where clause. Now what I want to do is return the nutritional values that are contained in at least 500 food items. So I'm going to do my join again. I don't care how many food items they have. It just has to be at least 500. So I'm going to do my left outer join again, grouping by the same columns, and having the count greater than 500. Or I can do my subquery. Yeah, I just have the exact same subquery, so where my subquery is greater than 500. So if I run that, that's not a huge efficiency boost. That is only 0.5% more efficient. And if I run it again, I get 19.19%. So,
So what's the trade-off between
doing this? Oof. Damn it. On average, yeah. I mean, it's not always going to be exactly the same, but let's do it a fourth time, shall we? What's the trade-off doing subqueries in Oracle versus? Well, it's the same thing. I mean, whether the question was, what's the trade-off doing it in Cold Fusion or Oracle? If you're doing it in, if you have your CF query tag, it's the same thing. You're writing it in Cold Fusion, but you're passing it to Oracle. So, I mean, if you're using a stored procedure in Oracle, it's going to be a lot faster, even if it's the same query because it's pre-compiled code. So I didn't get into stored procedures in this presentation because that's not database. Yes, that's not database agnostic, but certainly stored procedures are going to work faster because the code is pre-compiled. So even if you're just doing a basic query, which I don't do that. I don't put standard queries in stored procedures. I just think it's a lot of overhead. You have a query file, and then that calls a stored procedure. You have to go look at the stored procedure. You know, it takes away from the simplicity of web, but if I'm doing anything that's slightly complex, a lot of times I'll put it into a stored procedure.
Isn't there also a difference in how the results are returned to Cold Fusion? Whether it's a stored procedure, it comes back as like one file or one data element, whereas if it's a regular query, they come back one.
The question is, if it's a stored procedure, it comes back as one data element, where if it's a query, it's one at a time, and that's true. If you have 5 queries that you're running, and you always have to run them for this one particular process, you can have 5 CF query tags, 5 record sets, or you can have 1 stored procedure that returns 5 record sets with your CF proc result tag. So you just have one call to your database to get all 5 record sets. Each one is going to have their own record count, their own column list. So if you have a group of queries that's always grouped, that always has to run together, it might be better if you just throw them in a stored procedure to get it back. And that's much easier. That's very easy with SQL Server.
Another advantage to me that you want would be opening up more connections, and also that if those 5 are dependent upon each other, that you don't have concurrency issues or one runs and someone changes that piece of the database and the other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have less connections to the database, and he talked about concurrency issues. You make sure that you run them all as a group. You can have a transaction. I mean, you could put CF transaction around it anyway, but, you know, you're doing one hit to the database instead of 5, and SQL Server is probably going to return all 5 of those record sets in about the same amount of time the first one would have, depending on whether or not they're small, because you get overhead anytime you have an opening and closing Cold Fusion tag. Which is why I like CF Script a lot, and a lot of other people do as well, because you're opening the Cold Fusion tag, you're doing a bunch of processing, and you're closing it. It's much more efficient than having a lot of CF sets and CF ifs. So every time you have a Cold Fusion tag, you're going to have a little bit of overhead. All right, I think my next example is talking about keys. This database has no keys on it because it was in Access. I don't know if the Access database had keys, but when I imported it in the SQL Server, they would have been dropped anyway. So these queries are running with no keys. So I'm going to go to my where exists, and I'm going to switch this to not, because I am a good, pure person, and I don't want to have any foods that have alcohol in them. So I'm going to switch this to find all the food groups that are not in food groups that contain alcohol, or not exists food groups that contain alcohol. So what do you guys think of the weather lately?
By the way, you said there were no keys on these, so the numbers in efficiency gains we've seen might be somewhat artificial.
Yes. Well, I'll go back and run each one again after I add these keys here.
Difference between less.
Yes. Wow, this is taking a long time. Well, while this is running, we talked earlier about why you would use exists as opposed to just joining. Here's an example of where I work. I'm in charge of our contact system, our entire member prospect system. So we have contacts and organizations. And the advanced search page for this has about 30 search fields or more. Some of these are checkboxes or multi-select for related tables. You know, what business or what countries the organization does business in, what type of contact is this, and these are all one-to-many relationships. So I only want to join on the tables that I need. So I have organization. If I'm searching for a client, this is if I'm searching for particular client information, I'm going to join in all the contact tables. So I'm joining conditionally also because I don't want to return more than I need to. So you can see this is just a huge query. So I'm joining a lot of tables to begin with. And on those, if I have search criteria passed in, I'm just saying where it's equal to this. But there are some tables I don't want to join in because they're going to bring back multiple values. I only want to join in tables that are going to bring me a one-to-one relationship. You know, I have one contact that belongs to one organization. So I don't want to return these multiple join tables. All right, business country. So if they search on business country, it's going to be a common delimited list of business country IDs. So I select where exists, select one from org business country, where my organization ID that's in my main organization table equals org business country org ID, and the country is in my IDs. So this is an example of using both in and exists, because I'm using in because I have a common delimited list of IDs, but I'm using exists for the outer table because I don't want to join this table in. And I have several more that are like that in here. So this is the biggest time when I use exist is when I'm getting search results back, and it's a dynamic where clause. I mean, you can just see how many search fields this query has.
Was your reference to the no lock, does that mean, and is it relevant to most of us?
Ah, no lock. That is something we were having problems with SQL Server is one query like this that might take a little while to run was locking these tables. It was locking the contact login, contact org, and these tables are hit all over, you know. So it was even locking them for reads. So the I think it was the...
So by default, yeah, the database locks certain tables or rows.
Yes.
And if you don't need to worry about concurrency to the query, you do a no lock.
Yes. That's correct. And there is a setting that we ended up doing on the database to eliminate that. There is a setting that you can put at the top of the query, so in theory you shouldn't need to do that, although I found it still to be much faster with the no lock. And it's, I believe that now we have the setting set, it's not necessary, but it's sort of like locking reads from session variables and application variables. I do it, even though you don't necessarily have to. I've had issues with that in the past. So that's what the no lock is in SQL Server. And I don't know about Oracle if it has anything similar. So let's go back and see. Okay, well, this finally finished running. And there are no food groups that don't contain foods. There are no food groups that have food with no alcohol in them. So there's every single food group has at least one food item with alcohol. All right. Wow. Where in only took 322 milliseconds. Where exists took a lot more. It's negative 4,000% efficiency. Let's go ahead and add some keys. This is a script that's just going to add primary keys and a foreign key and an index. And this takes a second to run. For some reason, my installation of SQL Server Express seems to be a little kludgy.
There we go. By the way, have you noticed if SQL in general will utilize in a dual core machine?
Yeah, I haven't noticed what processes do what on the dual core. When I go into Task Manager, I only have one CPU usage, not two. So I'm not exactly sure how this differs from like a server maybe with dual core processing that balances it.
Well, I think it was the Microsoft people that were saying something along the lines that Windows sees a dual core differently than a dual process.
Yeah.
The other guy told me this. It would be one processor if you had a dual processor machine.
Mm-hmm.
The core, it would be both at the core.
Yeah.
Maybe apparently we're getting different answers from Microsoft. Yeah. Okay.
It's faster. Yeah. It is. It is much faster. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm running SQL Server Express. The SQL Server Management Studio runs so much faster on this machine than my old one, because Management Studio is a hog compared to Enterprise Manager. And Enterprise Manager ran fine on my last laptop. We upgraded, and SQL Server Management Studio crawled, so I was very happy to get the newer laptop for many reasons.
All right.
I'm sorry? Experience of using code against SQL Server? Oh, Toad. Oh, Toad. I love Toad. I miss that ribbit sound. I have not. Yeah, thank you. That was one of the biggest things I missed from Oracle, because Toad was just the best tool. And I do believe that they have Toad for SQL Server. I've heard it. I haven't used it, honestly, because Oracle didn't have the Management Studio, the GUI tools that SQL Server does. The one thing that I missed was the transactional rollback. So when you have a huge process or script in Oracle and you run it and you're inserting and updating it, and it doesn't explicitly commit it until you hit the commit button and you realize you screwed up, like deleting over 4,000 records from your client database in production, and you can't uncommit that, and then you have to go pouting to the IT guy saying, can you restore this from the backup? I missed that from Toad, because I didn't make those kinds of mistakes. You know, I'm always, like the guy in Office Space, I'm always missing some mundane detail and just doing something I shouldn't do. So yeah, I haven't used Toad with SQL Server, but I'm sure that it's probably just as good as it is on Oracle. All right, let's go ahead and run this one again now that I have my indexes. I don't know. The question was, is Sybase synonymous with SQL Server? I have no experience with Sybase, no experience with MySQL. So my standard tagline is, check the documentation.
SQL 6.5 is based off of the Sybase code.
Yeah. Right, because I believe that, yeah, the basis for SQL Server was Sybase, and they just kind of did their own. Yeah. Yeah, MySQL is probably something I should know, but I just never had the need to get into it. Luckily, every time I've done anything, we've had nice subscriptions to Microsoft stuff, so there's SQL Server. So as you can see now, this takes a lot less time. Where in, which took, I think it was like 300 or 400 milliseconds, is now down to 62, and where exists is now down to 36. And I have a performance boost. I indexed all my primary keys, and I had one foreign key, which I added and created an index on that. And now it's negative 25% efficient, but 4 versus 5 milliseconds. I mean, when you're down to that speed, you don't really, you're not that worried. Let me get rid of the not. All right, you can see these numbers have dropped significantly from where they were before. Let's do select all columns. So you see we had 296, 290, and 172. 234, 197, 135. On this one, it's going to be similar. So sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. So 166 and 130 on the joins. .237 and .194. So that one actually took a little bit longer, which is a little odd. Yeah, it's about the same. Less efficient to use the join and the from clause. All right, and it's going to do the subquery in the join. Subquery select. So we had 431 and 385. And 396 and 321. So sometimes some queries you're going to get a huge hit from. And a lot of these I'm just joining on two tables. These aren't overly complex queries. The exists and in was much more complex, and especially the exists. And I think that that's why I got the performance boost from that. All right, I have 5 minutes left. If there are any questions or any other examples somebody would like to see. Actually, before I forget, there is one thing I want to show you. I didn't do that. On the left outer joins, actually, we'll talk about join types. When you do a left outer join, you're really restricted. So say you want to select you want to join table A with a left outer join table B where the name in table A equals Celine. Well, this is not a problem. It's going to be fine. It's still going to do your left outer join. What happens if you do that? You now have an inner join because you're putting a filter, a restriction on column B. So you are now only going to get values in column A where there is a row in column B where name, a row in table B where name equals Celine. This is something that I used to run across, and I would have to do weird subqueries and joins to try to figure out how to do it. But there's actually a very easy way to do it. Oops. Our left outer join is still intact. And if a value in table B, these IDs match, but B.name is not equal to Celine, you're going to get null values in your result. But you will still get every row from table A. So this is just kind of, it doesn't go with efficiency, but I thought I would show this. This is a really nice trick that if you want to filter on your outer join table, you can do that without turning it into an inner join.
Can you include something like that in the files you upload?
Mm-hmm. I can do that. I can put an example in. I'll have that up. I'll do that sometime this weekend. So if you if you look by next Wednesday, it'll definitely be up there. And I'll put a note on the my presentation download page that says that it's been updated with this. So if you download it today, it won't have it. But this is a really nice trick that I found out that it took me a long time to learn. All right, 2 minutes left. Any questions?
Is that comparable to doing a stored procedure on the database? Given it's supposed to be kind of a, database is supposed to see it as a repeating query.
Yes, the question is using CF query param, is that going to be faster against your database? And the answer, I believe, is yes, because somebody was talking to me about that Wednesday after my presentation. And so, yeah, that should be faster than just having a standard value. That I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be probably not faster than a stored procedure, because with the stored procedure, the entire code is compiled, whereas just partial of it. But using CF query param is going to be faster than just putting in a variable in your where clause. Right there. You had a question, sir?
Yeah, I was wondering if you could talk about the
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Security is a big feature with stored procedures. It's a big boost. Although if you're passing in, 20 search fields, then, some people, myself included, get lazy and don't want to create a stored procedure. In that case, if you use your CF query param, you get some security benefit from that because it ensures it's bound that you're going to get the right data type. And I think I also had somebody over here who had their hand up a second ago. Okay. Oh, that's a good point. Okay, did everybody hear that? That if you have a really long query, that it's taking a long time to run for reporting needs, get rid of the order by statement and then do a query of a query to get that because it takes a lot less time in SQL Server, so it frees that up. Now, it would take longer in Cold Fusion, but if the idea is to get your database freed up, that's a good alternative.
Have you generally seen in queries a rough number of rows maximum that you want to be doing?
I don't do query of queries very often, so I don't know where you would want to hit with that. I've done them a couple times, and mainly it's because I'm pulling information from LDAP that I want to join with information in my database, and it's only been a couple hundred rows total. I did get the stop sign, so I do need to end, but I will be here for a couple minutes if there's any more questions. And thank you.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.